Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Today, we are talking about what are the four steps to financial independence on any income. I think this is particularly relevant right now, where a lot of people are struggling with their finances, or perhaps mortgage repayments are on the up. And there are always worries about inflation. And there are questions about, well, Michelle, if I'm earning only $60,000 or $100,000, how can I save and become financially independent? To help us with that is someone who's actually spent almost 2 years coming up with this amazing book that answers this very question. How do you achieve financial independence on any income in just four steps? The title of the book is Mission Possible, and that was released this year. Please welcome our guest today, David Scullin. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks, Michelle. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. So for those of you who haven't heard of David before, or you haven't heard of the book, David has more than 25 years of experience in the financial industry. He was a senior investment consultant at Jana Investment Advisors, which happens to be one of the largest investment advisors in the country that provide advice for the big end of town. So we're talking about superannuation funds, insurers. So when they come up with investments, it's in the billions of dollars. So I'm going to say that I've read the book. I think it's fantastic. There are very useful tools there. And it really comes from a place of someone who has seen it all and has really seen what are the smart strategies that has worked for super funds. And remember that super funds invest in the long term. So let's get straight into it. Tell us in a nutshell, what are the four steps to financial independence?
The four steps are actually captured in 16 carefully chosen words. So step one, earn more than you spend. Step two, invest the rest well over time. Step three, plan for property. And step four, cover risks.
So I think we will start with step number one, which is earn more than you spend. Let's say someone earns a salary of around $68,000. That is the average salary right now here in Australia. How can they build their wealth when their take-home pay per month is effectively $4,500? So let's assume they can afford to set aside $500 per month, for example.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, the fact actually that they're setting aside $500 per month means they're ticking off step one, earn more than you spend, which is great news. And they also, you know, if they're employed, they're also receiving 10.5% in superannuation contributions. So that's about an extra, you know, over $7,000 a year as well. So all up, it's over $13,000, which is great. Yeah, and you know, it may not feel like much initially, but the combination of doing this year after year, and hopefully with higher income and a higher savings rate at different stages, it really does add up. And I should add, I can talk to this experience myself. When I started my career, I was actually more focused on pursuing sport and took on very low income. So I was just earning, I guess, in today's dollars, about less than $30,000 a year and living in Sydney and still managing to save a little bit. And even after many years, I was still earning well below the average $68,000 in today's dollars. So and trying to save and invest it. And it can, you know, it works over time.
Yes, I agree. I do like the fact that you've included superannuation in your calculation. So you said, you know what, you're probably thinking your income, your take-home pay is this, but on top of that, you're earning 10.5% as well. And people forget that. And I know that you've devoted an entire chapter on how to invest inside super in your book. Now, of the four steps in your book, which one do you think most people fail to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, of course, we all have our strengths and areas we can work on. So it depends on the person and which particular area they could work on. But I'd have to say the area that actually people feel like they're failing is in the investment side, because, you know, people feel a combination of either they're not investing at all or not properly or not enough of it. And, you know, I think that's a common misconception in Australia particularly. You know, we've already mentioned super, and it's not just about super, but, you know, the fact that you have money being invested in super means you are investing. And interestingly, investing very well. A lot of people, you know, have an idea of what's investing. It may mean, you know, trading stocks, but a lot of people are, you know, in super, you actually are a true investor, long-term investor. And I've said a few times, it's actually quite possible now that a teenager going off to work is accessing a far more sophisticated investment than even their parents sometimes, or even sophisticated investors. And the amazing thing is that neither the teenager or the parents or the sophisticated investor realizes this, which is really interesting. And the book covers that.
I know that we have a world-class superannuation system, and in fact, it's the envy of some of the largest, you know, countries, whether it's the US or even the UK, is trying to follow our footsteps in terms of how we manage pension money. Now, yeah. Again, back to your four steps. Of the four steps, which one is most powerful, and do you have to do all four?
Yeah, you do have to do all four. They're all important. You know, if you look at, you know, without earning more than you spend, then you're not saving, which means you don't get to invest, which means you don't get to sort of diversify your reliance on your own labor. So that's, those steps are important. Step four, covering risks. You know, there's situations where people do all the right things and then a risk event occurs and their whole work comes undone. So that's important. And step three, planning for property. I wish I didn't have to include it, but in Australia, it's a reality just because of the cost of property. And it's unfortunate, and I find it frustrating, but you know, the reality is this day and age, you need to have a plan. It's not actually too complicated, and the book goes through it, but you need to be thinking about it. But in terms of, you asked about the most powerful in the first part of the question, and I'd have to say it's the investing side. And that's because within the investing, you can access what we call the magic of compounding. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about compounding, a lot of different quotes about how powerful it is. And I like the simplest one, which is it was attributed to Einstein. I'm not sure if he did say it, but the quote is that it's the most powerful force in the universe. And the problem with compounding is that it's not intuitive. It's not an obvious thing. And so very few people in history have applied the concept of compounding and reaped the rewards of it. But interestingly, Australian workers are possibly one of the first really broad cohorts to experience the power of compounding, just because they start investing as soon as they start working, right through until they retire, and even beyond that, because the money is still being invested. So, yeah, I think the investing step is really powerful.
Let's just take a step back and think about why the power of compounding feels like an invisible force, like gravity, for example. You know it's there, keeps everyone on the ground, but we don't really know the concept. We don't understand the concept. Now, you've worked with super funds, you've worked with banks and their investments. Do you find that people who are in the profession have a different view or a more tangible view of compounding than, let's say, someone who's in another profession? They could be in the medical industry, or they could even be an engineer, but the concept of financial compounding just doesn't kind of gel the same way.
Yeah, to some extent, I think, though, really it is not intuitive for any of us. It's a really hard concept to fathom. And in the book, I throw in a great story that sort of gives you an idea of how powerful it is. And it concerns a legendary story about a king and a servant. But I just don't think it's intuitive. So even sometimes, the people that should know it forget how powerful it is. And you don't have to do, I mean, the main aspect of it is investing and then getting out of the way and letting it do its work.
I love it. I love it. I think, and you're the first person who's said that, you know, do less and allow the investment teams of like super funds, or if you're in an ETF, for example, I'd have to, you know, qualify that by saying that you still need to do your research. You need to make sure that you're with a good super fund or a good investment fund. But that is coming, that is your lived experience. And that's what's important for people to know. You see this every day.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, a lot of people in the know absolutely recognize the importance of outsourcing, the complexity of investing. And so those who have got the knowledge actually go, no, I'm going to outsource it to the people that are specialized in that, in the investing side. And it's interesting, when it comes to things like, you know, health, we know that it's not right to do surgery on a family member. It's just intuitive that we don't do that. But when it comes to investing, for some reason, we think, yeah, I'll be able to both work a job, be a parent or, you know, a son or daughter, and also do the family's investments as well, along with all the other things I've got to do in my life. And you just don't have to do all of that.
We started earlier by talking about the average salary being around 68K, but many Australians are also earning around the 100,000 to 120,000 mark. And yet a lot of research have come out that it doesn't matter what you earn if you spend more. We've talked about that straight out of the gate. But technically, you could be on 70,000 or 80,000 or 200,000. But if you don't look after your money, you risk squandering your lifetime worth of savings.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, don't encourage people not to squander the opportunity for a few reasons. There's actually a lot of peace of mind that comes with having money set aside. And I think sometimes we don't realize it till it's actually in place. So that's one aspect. But also, you know, things can turn around quicker than we realize. And I think all of us probably can think of situations, either, you know, people we know personally or even publicly, where, you know, things were great and then something happened. And so it's really important to be just putting plans in place and money aside so that whatever happens, you're still looked after.
Yes, and you talked about disguised money in your book, for example. So someone who's quite prudent about their money, they may be earning $200,000 a year, but they live as if they were earning less, for example. So maybe a little bit of that can also help people kind of think about how do you make the most of your earnings.
Yeah, I mean, I've had lots of experiences, and you've mentioned my institutional investment. That's what I do now. But previously, I was actually a financial planner, which is why I sort of partly was able to write the book, having had that experience. But I used to see really interesting situations where, you know, people on extremes earning a lot but had a lifestyle that couldn't afford. And then there's these people that seemingly very modest, but, you know, really building up wealth and their options.
I want to talk about something else that you've mentioned in one of the interviews that you've done recently, and that is that people don't like to think about money because it's boring, you know. But then you responded, you said, well, we were taught a lot of subjects in school that were just as boring or even worse, but that doesn't mean that they didn't have any value or that we shouldn't do them or we shouldn't study them. So I thought that was a great thing to say. Can you tell us, what do you do, though, if you just find it absolutely boring or you just can't seem to wrap your head around money issues?
I mean, firstly, I have to say it's totally understandable if you find the topic boring. I actually relate to that personally. So, and you're not alone. We're not taught this stuff at school, so it can be overwhelming. A lot of it isn't intuitive. But on the positive side, we're actually all very lucky to be living in a time where the tools have never been better, simpler, cheaper, or more accessible, particularly in Australia. And you referenced before, a lot of people look to Australia as the example on many aspects, even the health and combination of health and super and all that. And the other good news is you don't have to be exceptional with any of these tools. You just have to, in fact, being average at all of them often is better than trying to be, you know, a standout investor. So there's actually, you know, a lot of positive news. Also, you can put a lot of the complexity aside and just focus on your role, which is, you know, saving a little bit, funneling it into investments, having a rough plan for property and covering risks, and then put aside the complexity. And often you'll do much better than those who are trying to do everything.
Yes. And I think people don't give themselves enough credit about how they understand finance. But when you get down to it, when you just have that bit of confidence and you apply common sense, then you can apply exactly the same logic to what you're used to. So I'm talking about my friends in the healthcare sector. I mean, clearly, you know, what they do every day, saving lives, is quite complex. And yet they come to me and say, oh, Michelle, money's too complicated. And I'll be like, You've got a PhD. I think you'd be able to figure this out. Now, your book contains lots of interesting and often funny stories about money. Which one's your favorite?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was very conscious that, you know, helping people get through the book and with adding lots of stories. I guess one of my favorites was about the KLF band, which is a bit of a famous band in the early 90s, one of the most successful, and it popularized stadium music. And they were so successful, they had about £1 million or $4 million in today's Australian dollars to show for it. And they had this idea that they're meant to be struggling artists. And so they decided that they'll burn the $4 million equivalent. So I think in 94, they went up to a remote island in Scotland and burnt the money. And they wanted to go up in flames and be quite dramatic, but it just sort of smoldered away. And the amazing thing is, years later, one of them was interviewed on the BBC and they said, do you regret doing what you did? And he said, absolutely. And my family as well. And the guy said, you know, my son came home the other day and said, a kid at school told me that you burnt £100. And he said to his son, if only it was £100. So it's just, I think it's an interesting story of some of the funny ideas we have about money and some of the things that we do.
I know. That probably sounded like such a great idea after like a case of beer or something. I mean, I don't know what happened then, but in many ways, it is like a metaphor to what we do when we don't invest our money. It's literally going up in flames when we're not thinking about how to grow it. For example, you did talk about all these useful tools in the book. You can invest inside super. You can invest outside super. You had some great tips there about property, because that is definitely, home ownership is a blood sport here in Australia. So that's very important to all of us. Now, I noticed you managed to get some pretty cool testimonials for your book from investing legend Howard Marks and finance author Morgan Housel, who's like a, you know, author of a best-selling book. How was the book writing and publishing process?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be hard, but way harder than I thought. And I have newfound respect for professional authors. I don't include myself in that. It's quite the process. And interestingly, in Australia, we need to get permissions for all quotes. And so that found me writing out to lots of different people, including Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger and Gloria Steinem, the producer of Kenny the Movie.
Nice.
Warren Buffett was interesting because I had to do a snail mail, you know, get out a stamp and address it to Omaha, and got responses. The only person I couldn't contact, and so his quote's not in there because I didn't get permission, was Jim Carrey. He's got a great quote, but I couldn't include it. So if any of your listeners know Jim, or Jim, if you're listening, please get in touch because I'd like to include it in a future edition.
Part two, I know. Oh, Jim Carrey. Love him. Is it The Mask? That's one of my favorite movies of all time, although he's obviously has a kind of pedigree as an actor and more recently as an artist as well. So he paints, which is incredible. Again, I think we've kind of run out of time right now. I want to talk a little bit more about the book, but honestly, what I love about it is that you've talked about fees there. So a lot of people want to invest, but they're not really sure about the fees and they don't know what to compare it with. So you can look at the tables where you look at fees, what are the exit costs, And I really like one of the tables you included where you compared what it's like to invest in a half a million property versus what it's like to invest that half a million into super. But once again, it's all about diversifying is what I got from that. You know, you mentioned earlier, you can't just do one step. It has to be the four steps, including covering risk, which you've addressed in the book. I don't know why, but it makes me think of cha-cha as a kind of dance step. You can't just do one step forward. You have to do the full shebang of one step, two steps forward, two steps back, and you have to do that to complete the cha-cha. But I don't know how you describe it to people, but the four steps, once again, very simple, easy to understand, and I just want to congratulate you on writing this book.
Yeah, no, thanks so much, Michelle, and thanks for having me on the podcast. It's been great.
No dramas. So before you go, don't forget that if you enjoyed listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics you'd love for us to cover through our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. And finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all the latest financial news and stories. And you can check it out because we are giving away the book Mission Possible to five lucky readers, but it's available at all the bookstores. You can check it out online. And once again, thank you for listening to us. That's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.